All right, today is March 7th, 2013. This is the first interview with Chris Clark. Chris is the men's crew coach here at UW-Madison. This interview is for our oral history collection, part of the UW-Madison Archives, and my name is Troy Reeves. I'm the head of the UW-Madison Oral History Program. Chris, I'm going to bounce between Chris and Coach Clark. I hope you're okay with... You never coach me, but I, when I'm interviewing somebody, coach usually comes out.
Yeah.
All right, for recording purposes, for sound quality purposes, could you say your name and spell your last name?
Chris Clark, and it's C-H-R-I-S-C-L-A-R-K.
Excellent. So I'm going to get this a little closer to you. It's picking you up just fine. I may have to project my questions, so I'm not yelling at you. I'm just trying to make sure our questions get heard. So, Chris, as I said before we turned on the recorder, I wanted to ask first about your just how you became interested in rowing.
My first memory of any rowing, I just remember watching the 1976 Olympics on TV. And so this would have been, I'm a 77 graduate of high school, Sunny Hills High School in Fullerton, California. And all I remember is my dad saying, wow, that's supposed to be one of the most physically demanding sports in the world. And that was it. That didn't pique my interest in any way whatsoever. I just remember him saying that. And what seemed like a long time after, so this is the summer between my junior and senior year. My father was a teacher at Orange Coast Community College in California. And going to a community college in California is vastly different than here. It's always been a bit of a shocker to me because you have MATC, which, first of all, they attach the technical name, and the bourgeois, the middle class, don't like their kids to go to anything. That's what I found. Mm-hmm. Whereas it's completely different in Southern California or Northern California, where that's just considered a normal path, that you often go to a community college and then you transfer to a university.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only is it acceptable, it's practical. And it's easy. Mm-hmm. It's easier to get into a better school that way. Anyway, neither of my parents had gone to college. And even though they were both in education, my mom was a principal. I don't remember any college talk at all, except one thing. I always managed to remember one thing. I remember I once asked my father where Stanford was. And he said, oh, it's up near San Francisco. That was the bulk of my college advice. And it's not that my parents weren't interested. They just weren't the type, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We've all run into different types of parents. And mm-hmm. They weren't. My one extant, our grandparent, was an overbearing grandmother on my mom's side. And I think my mother spent her entire life trying to not be like her. So, therefore, there wasn't do this, do that. So, it was laissez-faire, do what you want. Anyway, I don't remember graduating from high school and having any idea what I was going to do. Except my dad, they had a rowing team, and they still do. It's the one community college rowing team there is, varsity sport. And it's in Newport Beach, California. And he said, why don't you come to Orange Coast and you can row? And I said, okay. There might have been more thought put into it, but I don't think there was much more than that. And that was the beginning of it for me. And I remember he took me down in the summer of 1977 to be introduced to the coach, who is still... ageless, active person. And he seemed, quote, old to me at the time. I'm sure he was in the 30s. He became the college president, and now he's on the board of trustees of the community college district, which doesn't sound like much, but it is when you're talking 200,000 or 300,000 students. It's a big operation in California. And we actually, in about next weekend, or this weekend, is their 60th anniversary of their jubilee that I was asked to go to, but I can't because I have my own team. And, of course, the coach is alive and well, and he isn't directly coaching now, but he's still advising at 75 years old. And anyway, that was the beginning for me, and I rode there for 2 years, so, and it was great. The training and the time commitment is completely different. One, it was the 1970s, sort of you're still in the olden days of sports. You know, I think people did multiple sports in college often. That was typical. Multi-letterman, you don't see that much anymore. You might see track and football only because the football coach doesn't mind if a guy trains for track because it makes him quick. But otherwise, you don't see it. But at that time, you did. And because some of our guys were on the football team, too. Our training, just as an aside, at Orange Coast in the fall was nothing on Monday. Tuesday, we ran stadiums. But remember, this is like a high school style stadium. like, you know, at Memorial High, it's about that big. We'd run those, and then we would practice Wednesday or Thursday, Friday. That was it in the fall. And I thought, gosh, that was hard. So things are a lot different now.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we'll get to that when we talk about, you know, how you train your students here.
Okay.
So when was the first time you got in a... So the first time you rode was when you...
Yes, this would have been early September 1977. Got us in a boat. And, you know, things are very, not just very different then, but each program runs differently. This is the kind of place, and there's a lot of them like it, that they already started to isolate the best rowers together, and I was one of them. And, you know, I was the kind of kid, again, I told you the laissez-faire parents, they never enforced me quitting sports. You know, you get frustrated, you quit. I had done that a lot, and I was good at a lot of other sports. And I went in about 2 months in, and the pressure of being a, quote, first boater, which seems ridiculous now, but at the time it seemed like a big deal. I don't know if I can do this, you know, and it seemed hard to me. And I quit for a weekend, which I have seen since here, a couple guys do. And so, in other words, I think on a Friday I said to the novice coach, I don't want to do this. And I only now realize that as any rowing coach that deals with walk-ons, you have people say, oh, you're a successful coach. Well, it depends on how you consider success. And they go, what do you mean? Well, you won a lot of change. Yeah, but you realize, though, that 98% of all the people I come in contact with quit my team. So that's not very successful. Mm-hmm. That's, you're rejected by 98, at least, when you think about it. And it's very common. Anyway, I quit that for the weekend, and then I remember I went back to the reconsider because it was stupid. And this is, I want to say, November or December of 1977. I go to that coach I was talking about, Dave Grant is his name. And I talked to Dave, and Dave, I'm sure, has heard a lot of these. There's always these stories of, you know, I'm going to come back and row, and then they quit again. And I saw that. I've seen that myself while I was rowing, and I've seen it hundreds of times here. He said, yeah, you can do it, but you can't quit again. I said, okay. And that one, probably the most seminal moment of my entire life, was right there. And it really helped, because almost every freshman goes through the year and still not sure, especially walk-ons, if they want to do it. But for me, it cleaned it out. It was, that was it. I never, when I stopped rowing, it had nothing to do with, I just was done with it, especially after Oxford. But it wasn't for the same reasons. You know, there was no fear of it. It was, I don't want to do this anymore. So that really helped. And at the time, we probably had 35 freshmen. I think we ended up that year with 12. You know, all that many people quit along the way, but I was all in, so that was important.
Is that, I mean, it sounds like that's somewhat usual, though. I mean, you have...
Everybody feels like quit.
Well, so you have a huge chunk of folks come in and want to be rowers,
sure.
And then, it's, in this case, it sounds like a third of them stuck, but sometimes it's even less than a third of them.
No, it was, well, we had more than 35. That was just in by November, you know, another 20 oh, okay. guys had quit. We get that come to our first meetings here at Wisconsin. For a number of years, it was 90, 110, 100. But it really dramatically changed when we, and we can talk about this in another, and SOAR and registration, when we, I really started looking at the numbers. And it's extraordinary. I have a PhD. I don't, but I have the information to get one on biomechanics, statistics of every incoming tall person in almost 20 years. I have every single, and what's extraordinary is how consistent it is, how many people come to these meetings and how many, how tall they are, where they're from, everything. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And we get about 140 to 160 coming to the first meetings now. Wow. And it ends up with 12 to 15 graduating 4 years. That's where it,
okay.
And it, people have always thought that rowing has a higher attrition. It doesn't. It doesn't. Because rowing is, if you recently in the paper, they're talking about first-round draft choices from the NFL. It's very similar to football in a lot of ways. That we're in youth sports right now. I have children involved. What's shocking me, and I've talked to a lot of parents about it here, and I have a sixth grader, fourth grader, and a little kid, but the already in fourth grade, people are supposed to make decisions about, serious ones, about where their kid, fourth grade? And football's not that way. I'm certain that the middle kid in particular, he can show up in high school football and they'll take him immediately because he's big and he's fast and he's good. And that's not that way in a lot of sports. And that's, rowing is very similar. It's too serious of an endeavor. But if you're, I think, to start any earlier than 14 or 15, it's too hard. I was just with a priest the other night only because we were at a party that for our parish. And I joked with him about it, and I said the same thing. I said, I take rowing as seriously as I would the priesthood or a doctor. You don't become a priest when you're 11. So that explains why people get into rowing and really into it. Sometimes there really seems to be religious attraction to it, and they talk about it all the time. On the other hand, the reason the attrition isn't any higher, it's just all done at once. You're going to see your own children, if they're not in youth sports, they will be. That's attrition right now. You know, people are self-selecting or being cut from soccer, basketball, football. It's just happening over years. Mm-hmm. What's your son's name again?
Owen.
Yeah, and how old is he?
He's 8.
Right, and does he like soccer?
Sort of.
Yeah, well, he's going to do soccer. Right. I mean, almost every kid does. Let's say Owen at some point drops out of soccer. He's self-selected himself out. No one's going to, Owen quit soccer. It's not like it if you quit the freshman year. But it's the same thing. It's just no one notices it because there's a million Owens that they don't want to do soccer. But it just seems in rowing, it's just compacted into just a few months or over 4 years. So it seems dramatic. It's not any different than any other sport. It just happens.
Right.
Anyway, it's worth pointing that out. That, and the one thing we do not advertise at all is the degree of difficulty it is to be in a first aid. In other words, you know, we have a lot of people on the team. You have first aid, second aid, that gets equivalent to first string, second string, and so on. How hard it is to make it in the first aid, especially when we're good. You have to be exceptionally good. And the numbers are astronomical. The fact that we're sending 10,000 letters out a year to Wisconsin and Minnesota, and we're talking to hundreds of current high school rowers, and we have these high school camps where we try to get kids who are currently in high school that don't row. Like, we'll have one a week from Saturday, and there'll probably be 40 kids. We had 50 in the fall. All this to get maybe really good would be 2 kids per class. Hmm. 2. Mm-hmm. And that's just to make the varsity. But to make a fast one, it comes about every 5 or 6 years. It's astronomical. It's difficult. And that we don't advertise because we're the people's sport. That's how I framed it here. I don't want to go off in too many directions, but I always thought, you know, this idea that anybody can walk on and do it hurts you in some ways because the athletic department, at least this was my attitude when I first got here, or at least what I inferred their attitude was, is that anybody can do it. Well, yes, if you're hardworking and half decent, you'll probably be able to be on the bottom of the team. But you still have to be fairly good. But that's a giant gulf from the very top of the team. You have to be exceptionally good. Mm-hmm. But where people sport in the sense, and I say this on a regular basis, that if every single freshman showed up, male freshman, well, and female because of the women's teams, we'd be happy. And we could vet them through. So, and it, anyway, that helps frame what we're trying to do.
Right.
And there are, the recruiting process for rowing has dramatically changed, and all our competitors use international oarsmen. The majority of the best guys that we row against are not American. They're worldwide. You know, Europe, Australia, Canada. But because of that phenomena that you're born to row, that you just don't know it, you combine those guys with the few we get. Let's say we get 15 recruits a year, which we usually do. 1 to 2 of those may have some real capacity. And if you can mix them with real athletes, it provides a great stew of greatness. But I've only had 2 distinct periods of great rowers here. I've had individually great rowers. I have one right now, but he's not going to win because you have to get a few collected together to win a Nobel Prize in rowing. You know?
Right.
And anyway, I don't know.
Well, let's keep talking about this. I know we started back in 1970s, but
yeah, anything else about the 70s? Sorry, I went off.
No, that's fine. We can go back there, but I do want to ask. You talked about international athletes, so I want to bring this to the present. Are you recruiting international athletes?
Well, they won't come because rowing is, you know, free for all. They're just giving scholarships to, and we, all the competitors, the Ivy League say they don't have athletic scholarships, but it doesn't matter. They have extraordinary financial aid, so people are getting full rides all the time, quote, just because they're going to the school. Mm-hmm. And all the competitors have scholarships. We have the money to give them, but they haven't granted us. It's kind of like we're traditional in a lot of good ways, but that's a bad way.
Okay.
And if we had the ability to give scholarships, which our women have 20, and they have 20 paid for by the athletic department, that can be split into, there's two types of scholarships. Most people don't know. In football, basketball, hockey, for example, they have one guy, one scholarship. Whereas most of the sports, you can split them into pieces. Mm-hmm. You could split the pieces that the women have into hundreds of individual small scholarships. That would be a great tool. Having said all that, I have no interest in international athletes at all. That doesn't mean we're xenophobic or that I don't like Canadians. It's just that this right here, some Euro wants to come row. He probably doesn't want to sit out and, you know, see a frozen lake. And almost all, especially Euros, even though it's cold in those areas, you still have a river to row on all the time, like in Serbia or Germany. Or so we wouldn't do it anyway. That's the answer. Okay. Even if I had the means to do it. Plus the type of team we have and who they are, they change it. Even better recruits can change it. I'd rather have a blank slate.
So
it's more fun to deal with.
The men who row for you don't get any compensation.
Nothing.
For rowing.
Not one. And we compete at the highest level. Mm-hmm. It can be done. It requires this formula that I'm doing, and I'm sure that someone can do it better than I can, but it's hard. It takes a lot of effort. I don't mean it's like, you know, digging ditches hard, but it requires full court press all the time on every area, and even then it doesn't always work.
So how do you find out about, I mean, you sort of alluded to this, but let's sort of keep this on the present. How do you find out about these now 14, 15, 16-year-olds that are rowing? How much of it is that, and how much of it is like it was in the old days that you read about where, you know, you're just scouting out at registration for people who are appropriate height?
Right. We have a three-legged stool, basically, a base, and one is the one here, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Another is the current high school rowing, which is booming, and the reason why high school rowing is booming, I think various reasons. One is that women's sports, girls' sports in high school obviously has boomed, right? I mean, that goes without saying. And girls want to row with boys, and boys want to row with girls. They don't, not that they always want to row with them, they form programs together. You know, it's in concert, which I think is great. Mm-hmm. It's funny, you know, I'm sure that there's plenty of individual situations where Title IX hasn't reached, but thinking about it, there's no war anymore. It's over. And it's done. Because the current kid, they can't imagine not having women around. It would be bizarre. Mm-hmm. It would be like saying, you can't vote.
Right.
It's done. It did its thing. It's perfect. And especially, and, you know, it's even more so at the, you know, they play soccer together, they do, so it's great. That has led to a dramatic rise in high school rowing, and parents are getting savvy because I think even football, for example, is becoming less popular with suburban-style parents in particular, and then, you know, they move their kids to other sports, and rowing is often one of them, and one of the reasons why they like it is it can help them get into a better college. Rowing is no different than any other sport, that if you're good in high school, it's going to help you get at least one leg up in a better university than you might be able to. That's one thing. The coaches at the junior level, which is, you know, under 18, are far better than they used to be. They send out a lot of information. So the information about these people that are interested, at least at that level, the higher level, is out there. And it's still unbelievably the lure of the Ivy League. Part of it, a lot of them are from the East Coast, but there's still a lot of West. It's always blown my mind how attractive the Ivy League is to the parents. Mm-hmm. Like, you're a loser if your kid doesn't go to the Ivy League. You got to be kidding me. I deal with these people all the time, and I know you have too. And you probably, you'll run into people that have gone to Ivy schools, and either they're reformed, they're now Wisconsin people, and they realize the error of their ways, or else they're even worse than you thought. Mm-hmm. I found it's usually one or the other. And anyway, the information out to get better recruits is there. And Simon Carcagno, who's our current freshman coach, is in his own way, his approach has taught me a lot about recruiting. He said, you know, we spend an enormous amount of time working the other two sides, member of the three-leg school, which I'll talk about in a bit. And even you put vast amount of energy, and even then you can not get a real star for 2 or 3 years doing that. Because it's such a crapshoot of the type of athlete, because they don't come along that often. And even though they may look the part, that doesn't mean that's who they are. However, on the recruited rower side, we just haven't put the right amount of effort in. And he's been relentless, and boom, our recruiting of our high school rowing has dramatically improved. Right now, we're... Renaissance isn't the right word, because that would imply that, you know, that's a rebirth. Mm-hmm. It's a birth. It's not a rebirth. It's just getting better. And, you know, on the coaching side, you know, my colleague next door, she has a very different opinion on assistants. I wanted an assistant that either has ambition to leave or should be someone who wants to hire them away. She feels that she would keep one for 20 years and they can be the best assistant ever. I don't feel that way. Mm-hmm. So I know Simon will leave. I have a little comic I cut out of the New Yorker once and I forgot, and it shows the boss talking to a guy and he says essentially, Jones, all of our best people eventually leave, yet you're still here. That concerns me. And anyway, so I was just worrying about it today. I have to find somebody who can do as good of a job of recruiting as he is. Because he's found, you know, you're always looking to improve. It's difficult, but it's easy to become, if not lazy, then satisfied. And he found a way. And it's just his relentless, not in a bad way, of just continuing dialogue with these people, even when they say their first choice. This would be like trying to date, and they just come right out and tell you, well, you're choice number 3. Mm. That doesn't stop him. Okay, well, and it's really working. Mm-hmm. It's really helping a lot. And you're not going to see the direct impact of it as much this year, but you will in a couple of years. So anyway, I'm excited about it. That's how we get high school rowers. And the information's out there, you know, email. You know, this is just an aside that most people have never thought of, but I have, is about 10 years ago, a letter, just a regular typewritten letter, was considered old-fashioned, maybe even 5 years ago. No one gets those anymore. Something happened, and it's switched now that an email is considered old, but a letter? That's a really important and gesture from a coach and from anybody. You know, that took effort. You know what I mean? It's kind of, most people don't think about it because they're not in a certain situation like we are with recruiting. So, you know, we used to email more, and we still email, but now I always send, you know, about once a month letters to recruits, and they always... And the impact of letters is funny, and you know, when it comes to this walk-on registration that we have, you'd be surprised what suckers they are, because they don't understand how the regular mail works, I guess. I don't know. Because they deal in electronic deliveries. They almost all say, oh, yeah, I got a letter from you guys. Like, we send one to everybody. They're not even sophisticated enough to understand that. It doesn't say, Dear John. It says, Dear. But it really has an impact. Which is bizarre. Don't you agree that it had 5 years ago? Who sends the letters anymore? Right. Now it's, that person really cares about me if you get a letter. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so.
So it's, so you get information from junior coaches.
It isn't just that, right, but that's one of the ways, right? Right,
and then you have.
They come to us.
They come to you.
I get at least, I would say, and I think part of it is a byproduct of Simon's efforts. Mm-hmm. I'm getting anywhere from 8 to 20 emails a month now, just me. Sometimes they're co-copied with other people, but I didn't get that before. And I finally, you know, I'm getting so many now that I've got about 3 canned responses, depending on what category they fit. Mm. And I'll copy. Simon doesn't, I used to copy him, but now he wants me to blind copy because he wants his, I give Simon's email in it because he's the one that has more of the answers than I do about it. Mm-hmm. And that's the first test, how interested the kid is if he's going to find Simon's email and mail him. So, and here's just an aside that most people don't think of. The outcome when it's driven by the kid or by the parent is vastly different. You'd be surprised how many that are driven by the parent. The parent contacts you first. I would say, you know, we've never really run the numbers, and we have them everywhere. We just haven't looked at them. I'd say it's twice as likely if it's the kid driven that he'll come here and be successful, at least maybe three times, than it is if the parent drives it. Either the kid's not that interested, or whatever, they're dumb, they're passive, who knows what the reason is. Mm-hmm. But when it's kid driven, you're immediately, that sets us, that's a yellow flag, the parent driven recruiting process. I think it's really common in a lot of other sports, but it isn't with us.
So kid driven.
Kid driven is they contact you first, right, and you hardly have any contact with the parents. I mean, almost none.
And those seem to bear more fruit.
Yes,
overall.
Absolutely. Okay. I think it's probably true in a lot of them.
So what's the...
Because it's their agenda.
Right. So do we have two of the three legs of this stool then?
No, we only talked about one.
Okay, so let's move to it.
So I keep referring to the SOAR, which, you know, that's an acronym. I mean, I know Student Orientation Advanced Registration. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure when it shifted from the old, what do they call that, the stock pavilion.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know how many people I meet. Almost every single older alumni I meet, when I was there, they would walk down the line and they picked the rowers. Mm-hmm. And they always seem shocked when I say, well, we still do a version of that. What I gather, that was only a few day process. Mm-hmm. You know, you showed up, you registered, and then somewhere along the way, and this must have been late 80s, I think, it shifted to this orientation they have in the summer that's SOAR. Which, by the way, hardly anybody is, I may not be an expert, but SOAR changes every single summer. They make changes. And sometimes dramatic, sometimes not. This is just me. I know this isn't going out being broadcast to the world, but these are social science people that run this. And I don't know if it's new regimes come in or if new theories come in, but they're tweaking their product all the time. Whereas I found generally the most successful products are slight tweaks, not major. Mm-hmm. We've had to fight our way to maintain our position since I've been here at least three times, battling, like right to the top. Barry Alvarez steps in, goes to the chancellor. Right now, we seem to be fine. But this is, what, February? I probably would have heard if we have to fight our way again. So we're probably okay. The latest iteration of it is the very best I've ever seen. But let me go back to the other leg. The other one was, I remember sitting around just ruminating once. Is it really smart to just sit here and wait for these people to come? Can't we tweak the process and somehow either encourage people to come that are currently football players or basketball players that had never thought about it, or at least get people interested before they get here? How do we do that? And with that, well, you know, I'd see these rosters in the newspapers. You know, it's like basketball preview. You know, it has Dave Smith. You know, he's 6'6". He's a junior. Like, well, they have a lot of the heights and names right here. That's interesting. And then my freshman coach who finished last year was 03. He did the first version of it. Even I knew this was a ridiculous attempt, and I still give him grief about it. During the state football championships, he sent out a letter to every AD or every coach, football coach, come meet us in our office, and we'll talk about your athletes for rowing. First of all, that's a ridiculous idea. And I remember, no, it'll work. Afterward, how many coaches came? Of course, zero. But it was at least thinking in the right direction. And he never really wanted to run with it as much. But my subsequent coaches did. Now he's the head coach at University of Pennsylvania. So the system morphed. And we thought, all right, we're going to go out and gather as many names as we can. How do we contact them, though? It's not like their addresses are. And then I heard that University of Washington had done some version of this a long time ago. Apparently that's long gone, but anyway, I heard that. And then I forgot how I figured out that if we just send it to the school, they'll get it. It didn't occur to me at first. They don't throw it away. They get it. Voila. So now we have to gather information. How many high schools are there? There's a little over 1,000 between Wisconsin and Minnesota. That's where the reciprocal comes in. It's a huge deal for us. So we just consider it one giant state of 10 million people and almost 1,000 high schools. And, all right, what rosters do we want? Well, it's not like we only want football and basketball players, but why do those rosters? Because they list their height. And we focus on 6'2 or over. And we found football players have a tendency to make themselves heavier than they really are. You know, whereas you would expect women would make themselves lighter just because of the nature of boys versus girls. Mm-hmm. And they always make themselves taller than they really are. But 6'2", we figured out we'll go with that. And we get, I think it's between football and basketball, close to 10,000 names. And we also hit volleyball and swimming, but not all of them, just some of them. And swimming in particular, we have a certain letter that is for swimming and also for cross country. And we'll send cross country letters also to the northern suburbs of Illinois because they can pay. They're not worried about the out-of-state as a rule. But those ones are different because we don't know how tall they are. We just say the best rowers are generally 6'2 and over. So anyway, when we started doing that, we realized, well, that's great. They get a letter from us. But we need some further things to get them to create our own rowers. One is we decide, well, we'll just have these little fall and winter camps that two of them started with one, that they'd come here, they row on the rowing machine a bit, they row on the rowing tank a bit, we get them excited about rowing. And that gets them here, they see the boathouse. We can, because it's a camp, we can do anything we want with them, we get them on the rowing machine, we see their potential. We started, I think it was like 4 to 5 guys came to the first one about a decade ago, or a little, maybe 11 years ago. At the exact same time, we realized we need a summer camp too, because that's another feeder, like a for-profit summer camp. I think the very first summer camp, I think, would be the summer of 01, I think, 2001, and I think 4 kids came. I think last year, we had 91 in our summer camps. It takes a long time. And rowing camps aren't like soccer because they're expensive. Ours is $670 for 5.5 days, which is a lot for a novice. You think they've gone to football camps, soccer camps, for $300, and all of a sudden you're asking them to do something they've never done before, and it's $670. But anyway, so we've subsequently got that machine rolling. And we've actually, our pure... Let's go to registration or orientation and meet a guy who knows nothing about rowing. Everybody knows something about it now. So we've sort of wrecked our own, you know, what philosopher it was, like the savage, noble savage, you know. Essentially, we were looking for that. But we've ruined that because they now already, almost everybody's heard of rowing. In these high schools, it's become a minor legend that, I don't know how many people I meet. Oh, yeah, I got a letter. Or my son got a letter. Or everybody knows in Wisconsin and Illinois, which is good. So to meet a kid at SOAR now, I'll move on to the third leg, that knows nothing about rowing is almost impossible. And I still count. It's still bizarre, though, even after all that effort, some of the best guys you get still knew nothing until we talked with them. Now, orientation now, instead of, you know, a couple days, it's usually 29 to 32 sessions in the summer. And it's, as I said, it's morphed. Sometimes we talk to them on the first day, they get there. Sometimes on the second day. There was a time when we got to talk to them for 5 minutes, And that was a nightmare. And here's what, when I got here, I inherited, I didn't get here until July of 1994, and I want to say about July 15th. SOAR started later. It shifts when it starts, too. Early, later, who knows when. Goes into August 20th, finishes July 31st, but at the time it would finish late, so it started later. So I'd already missed those 3 weeks of it. And I was just used to guys showing up, and for a number of years, and I went the first couple of years when I was here to those sessions personally, and I had assistants do it. And we'd languish. I have all the numbers, and you would see they vary pretty dramatically. Oh, we talked to, this is over the entire summer, 300-something guys, 250, and then we have their heights, 6'3 or over, which we found is a key number, 6'4 or over. And it's hard to find a relationship between that and success. And then right at the tail end of my freshman coach, Greg Meyer, he just inherited my attitude toward it, so I'm not going to blame him. He said, we'll let this, you hire kids in the summer, they would do it. And, you know, maybe some good guys will show up. We didn't have a professional approach to it. And we had three down years, and they're all related to one another. And all of it had to do with the fact that it was really a poorly done job at SOAR. And I was, it's got to be better than this, because I see around campus these big people walking around who weren't rowers. And I remember talking to Greg and also Scott Allwin, who's now he went to Middleton High. He's a head coach at Columbia for lightweights. And they both, the demographics have changed. I said, I don't believe it. They haven't changed. And we have these notebooks that have, every year, it has sheets, and each sheet represents one person. They fill it out. The person themselves does. And I looked up there on my bookshelf. I have three skinny notebooks, and all the other ones are big up to that point. What the hell's going on? There's my evidence. And I started, this is 03, 04, and I started putting effort. I wrote, things have to change right now. And that was a complete renaissance. And our numbers since then are so freaking consistent. It's unbelievable. How, I mean, you're talking, the amount of guys that are 6'3 or over, 6'4 or over, can vary by two. Over an entire summer with a completely different student body, it's two. Which is shocking. It's just demographics of how tall people are. Mm-hmm. And we do exactly the same thing every single. We try to talk to every kid that's tall, even if they're on another sport. Not because we're going to trick. I just want to talk to every tall kid so I get them in the book. Mm-hmm. And that, having said all that, there's entire years when the best guy that comes out of SOAR is 5'11" and he's not very good. So some of the conclusions I've come to is an Olympian comes once every 10,000 walk-ons. That's about what the number is. The last two I've had were twins. So they took up 20,000 spaces. So they came in the summer of 05, and you get around 3,000 per round. So 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Multiply that by 3.
That's 21,000.
Exactly. So, we're due, baby.
Yeah, you're due.
We are due. Exactly. And it seems like we have some. And it's not quite a pure experiment, simply because I'm also mixing in everybody, including recruited rowers. You know, it's obviously not just SOAR, but I found it occurs about once every 10,000 freshmen. That's about it. And I could do a more sophisticated job of it, but all of a sudden, I have three or four bodies here. I can tell if they have the body to be in a, boom, I have them right now. I haven't had any that are a sure thing. Well, none of sure things, but it'd be like, you know, it's a modeling search or something, right? I'm sure they can tell right away if at least someone has the potential to be someone who's 6 foot tall, 130 pounds, walk on a runway. You're 5'6" and 140, I'm not going to make it. Mm-hmm. And it, boom, it's just numbers. I love statistics. So anyway, that's what we do at SOAR. It's a freaking drag, though, because you're here the entire summer, and you can't leave. And it's only last summer's the very first time I missed any sessions at all in a decade, because I was afraid, because it killed us so bad. And Simon is so good at it. I'm already worried this summer, though, because he and his wife, who's the novice coach, have to go to a wedding. So they're going to miss a week and a half of SOAR. And I'm fully ready to concede he's better than I am at it now. Not when he first got here. Or at my peak, I was pretty good. But still, you think of yourself as a younger person. We all do. It's not like you think of yourself as whatever age. But I'm not, when he's younger. As someone said, he's a man flirt. He's perfect at, he can talk to men in a way that, hey, this is an interesting guy. I used to be able to do that, but I'm not as good. So anyway, I'm already worried about it. But there was a few years that SOAR used to be, the best scenario is when it's Monday through Thursday. A couple summers ago, it was on 7 Sundays. Talk about ruining your summer. My wife's like, when do you have anything to do, time to do anything? So you'd 7 days a week because you'd have your own rowing camps here. Mm-hmm. Come on, man, it's summer. Fortunately, last year it wasn't on Sunday. So. God knows what it'll be this year, I swear. For 2 years in a row, it's been... Part of the reason I think it's better than ever is it's now at Union South, the new Union South. The old Union South was clearly designed by one of those guys that were designing East German, like prisons. That was the worst place. And a lot of people that will... anybody ever listen to this, I don't know. They'll laugh because they know what I'm talking about. That was a nightmare. That was not a place you wanted to be in. The new Union South is such a pleasing environment. People want to stay. And we get to see them more than once. They're in there, and they just casually walk back and talk to us. I think that's helped a lot. I love it.
So now that it's in new Union South, you have folks just there all the time.
Correct. Me and our assistants. And we finally, though, after we've been under, we kind of had to work with SOAR. The SOAR people, for 2 years we haven't. That doesn't mean we went rogue. It just means we actually, if anybody, we have to negotiate with, it's with the Union South people. And I saw Daryl Bazell, I think, a couple of, last year? And I found out, because he was in the chain of command of the Union. I couldn't find out who, I want to know who, if we have any conflict. He goes, oh no, we know you do that, it's really important to the campus. Maybe he says that to everybody about everything, but it's important he knows it. Mm-hmm. So we've been golden over there. We don't get in anybody's way. But it was a constant with the people. There was a woman that ran SOAR that when I got here, she was an assistant, and she ran it for a while. This is just my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think she hated us. And she wasn't mean to us, but they felt that the one thing they really didn't like, you're just selecting people. We want them to be in a comfortable environment. It's not about competition. Well, first of all, every single person that came here competed to get here. We're not competing with them. We talk to anybody that comes to talk to us, anybody. And a lot of them do. They just walk up to us. Mm-hmm. And then we talk to anybody. And our approach is always the same. Hi, we're from the rowing team, and you look athletic. That's a win-win statement. Oh, really? Yeah, because I was on high school sports. I didn't do any sports. You should have, because you look perfect. A couple things I've learned about SOAR as well is, I had to explain this to these helpers we've had. Don't ever, 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 ever ask them if they want to row. How the hell do they know? That'd be like the first time you ever were interested in girls, and the first girl you walked up to, hey, do you want to get married? That's a giant commitment. All you're trying to do, and I tell them, I said, talk a little about rowing in our old, because they are, the people that are slightly suspicious are the best people. The people that are 100% into it are the ones that quit, because they don't know what rowing is. It's a brutal regime, is what it actually is. And then the ones that have no interest at all, they think they're too cool. Rowing. Really? You know who our people are? They're the smartest people on campus, or at least the most driven. They run companies. They're going to law school, medical school. You're just a frat boy. That's what I want to say, but I can't. It's the ones in between her. I don't know. Tell me about it. But all it is, you say, we have 3 information sessions, and we'd like you to come to one of them. And if you like it, just keep coming. That's it. And I found that approach really works well. But don't ever, ever even ask them to come. We just say, here's, fill this out, please. We, even if you have no interest, because we want to market you with more information. They always do. I mean, it's 95 out of 100 do. Some don't, but most of them do. So that's it. That's how we run SOAR.
So that's the one of the three. I mean, it sounds like each of the three legs have their own problems, but it sounds like SOAR has been the most problematic at times.
It's the most stressful because it's so important to us. And we had a big meeting with, like, 2 years ago with one of the associate dean of students about it, and because this woman was still running it. And the minute she left, boom, all the problems went away. It's amazing. Part of it is we're not in the chain of, you know, we used to, because of the way they ran it, we were part of it. They called it a resource fair. In other words, a particular time where, you know, the cops are there usually. I get to know all the University of Police because of it. Mm-hmm. The library, all sorts of. Mm-hmm. We were lumped in with them. Now we have our own space. And we don't do it. And I don't know how we got it. It was hardly an amazing coup, but it seems like it compared to what we've had before. And they put us near the stairway, kind of right in the middle. And it's great. We talk to everybody. We're careful, though, to not. But I can tell the attitude of the people that work at SOAR is completely different. Used to be suspicious of us. Because look out for those rowing people. Why? You are the rowing people. I mean, they're just people like you. We talk, I want to say, between men's and women's rowing, 10%, 15 to 20%. Well, maybe 20, close to 20% of the entire freshman student body fills out a form. So it's hardly frowned upon by them.
Right.
And you have to be very careful not to be super aggressive, because sometimes that's when someone will complain. It does happen occasionally, but hasn't for a long time. Mm-hmm. If someone's not interested, they're not interested.
So is there anything else you want to say about the three legs? Because I want to ask, there's going to be several times here I sort of ask a rowing 101 question because I don't know that much about it.
Okay.
So my first rowing 101 question is, why does height matter?
Just leverage. I got to clean my gutters. Do I want an 8-foot ladder or a 10-foot ladder? That simple. Longer arc. That's it. You know, leverage, longer arc of the oar. That's all it is.
Okay.
But long limbs.
But there are still, you alluded to it, there are still good, you end up with some good rowers who are 6-foot, 5'11",
then I think it's, they're often lightweight rowers. You know, there's a whole other division that's, you know, whatever kilos that is, 70-something kilos. But that's part of it. But also, some long arm, long leg, short people is what you want.
Okay.
And then the arc of their blade could just be, you know, a few degrees longer, but it makes a big difference. So they row a lot longer than they actually are.
Okay.
And then there's plenty of big people, though, that don't have the bite. They have short arms, long trunks. You don't want that. You want long legs. It's you can generally tell by looking, and it's bizarre. You know, we scrutinize these people not in. I mean, if you were watching us at SOAR, you might be thinking, especially the men looking at, because we help with the women too. And you look at them carefully, and you're like, look at those guys, those latches. Not really. We're looking at them like the physical specimens they are, and we're trying to determine. We'll still talk to them no matter who it is,
right.
But the perfect is long-armed, long-legged. You can't have short arms. And skinny shoulders is also a problem. You want really wide shoulders, but you can't always tell until they get into a boat. When the guy gets in the boat, you want him to look pretty short. That's why it's a shocker when they get in. Ooh, look at that person. They're huge. So that's why.
Okay.
And the bigger you are as a person, often the bigger cardiovascular capacity you have. You know, some people are blessed with real lungs, but it's just larger, too, so you can produce more power down the down the course. You want power, too. If power didn't matter, as I like to say, too, like lightweight women, they have to be under 130. They row fine. Never in the history of the world will lightweight women beat men. Only because they're stronger. Period. Mm-hmm. No matter what. It'd be like, you're never going to see, you know, 180-pound women playing the NFL. Ever. Unless something biologically or genetically changes, you know. So that's why power matters. A lot. Mm-hmm. But too big is too, you know, we talk about this all the time, but the vast majority of really big guys I've had here aren't very good rowers. Part of that is because if they were better athletes at that size, they'd be have been vetted by another sport. Mm-hmm. You know, they've already been vetted out. And so you need to find that freak athlete who, for whatever reason, didn't do another sport if they're tall. One of the best guys I ever had, Derek Rasmussen, he was a senior in 2008, rowed 6C, which is an important seat, you know, when we were undefeated. He used 6'6 and ran a 4:28 mile. So often it's the parents. It can all start with the parents not being interested in football or basketball. And both his parents rowed here. So that helped. But he came here as a walk-on. So there was a, you know, once in a... He did under 23s, won a gold medal, but he didn't want to go on and row for the Olympics. But nonetheless, that's the kind of guy you're looking for, and they're hard to find. So we currently have two big guys on the team, which is funny. One 6'7", another one 6'10". They're real contrast. The 6'10" is a recent transfer. He got a scholarship to play volleyball. So he's a D1 athlete at Pepperdine, but then he injured himself in some way. They didn't want to play volleyball anymore. So anyway, he went to Villanova, of all places, and rowed there as a freshman, got interested, transferred here because he's from Chicago. Now, in contrast to him, another kid who rowed, he's a junior, he rowed his freshman year, he was okay, and then he injured himself, so didn't row last year. But I've got these two guys, and one of them is your classic big guy. Not dynamic or coordinated enough to move the boat like they should, considering their weight. Because all that power and weight becomes dead weight if it's not used properly. And then on the other side, I have this young guy who's a volleyball player, and it's a little too early to tell, but he may be the 1 in 100 big guys who actually eventually turns out to be a star. I can tell already, though, watching him row on the rowing machine, he's stronger, fitter, and he's only rowed a year and got a little club program. So, but the vast majority of big guys, are awful. That's why I want tall and skinny, because I don't have to worry about the dead weight factor. Mm-hmm. I like everybody under 200 pounds if I can get them, even at 6'6" or 7", which isn't easy to get, because our competitors, Washington in particular lately, they got like football players for the most part. They want them all over 200 pounds. But these are pro rowers. I mean, they'll get guys that are 22 or 3 already been in the Olympics. They're professionals. And when they've been vetted in their own countries, they're already good athletes. And often I found these big people in other countries, they don't have football. That's the giant sport that can pull these people out. They don't have that. So you can get some of the best athletes doing Olympic sports, including rowing. So that's why you're more likely to find an international who's big, who's good than you are in U.S. rowing. That's what I found. I know that it's all anecdotal, but it's pretty accurate. The best big guy I ever had, well, I've had two brothers. Both were captains. The older brother was taller, 6'9", Andy Kaufman. He's now in medical school. He was more aggressive and stronger than his brother, Michael Kaufman, who graduated in 2011. But Michael Kaufman at 6'6", 210, was the best big rower I've ever seen. He could row. His problem was he wasn't naturally gifted cardiovascularly, aerobically, or as an athlete, as the idea that I'm going to crush and kill and get ahead, you know, like a lot of very aggressive people. By the time he was done, though, he was brilliant. He only made the varsity 1 year, and we came within 3 seconds of winning the whole thing. And the guy was brilliant. I've had one guy like that in 18 years that... he really rows like, I want a big guy to row. Mm-hmm. One guy. And even he wasn't the complete package but I think in 2 or 3 more years, he could have been an Olympian. But that's part of it, is he wasn't driven enough for that. He just wanted to get a job. So anyway, hope that helps.
So you're looking for, at least body-wise. I mean, because the attitude's a completely different thing.
You've got three things you're looking for, right, is the biometrics, you know, what are the measurements, the physiology and the psychology, those three things. And when you get all three, you're in business. And almost everybody has some weakness on one of those branches, you know. For the best guy I have right now is brilliant in every way, except he's not tall. Ben Ruble is his name. He's a senior. R-U-B-L-E. He's pound for pound as good a guy as I've ever had here as far as tough. And I'm sure his VO2 max and his numbers are off the chart. He's amazing. But he's 6'1", 177 pounds. That doesn't preclude him from making the Olympics. It's just a lot harder because you have to prove yourself every step of the way. But he's good. You put him in a 6'6 body, he'd be the top guy in the United States right now, period, at all levels. But, I mean, even at international level. But he's not, you know. But what's great about it is this guy in particular is one of the great poster children I've ever seen of how you progress from starting as a novice. So now he's only rode for 3 years and 6 months, right? Mm-hmm. That's it. And if you know, all these rowing machine scores, are that's the easiest way to measure progress. They're super consistent. Often you'll have people that go up a couple of years, drop back. This guy was just like unbelievable. Every single thing he's done for the last, well, 4 years is better than the one before. Guy's a tough mother, man.
Which leg of the stool was he from?
He was straight up sore, like, which is rare. He might have been a letter guy, but if he got a letter, I don't see how, because he wasn't tall enough. But that doesn't mean we don't make mistakes. But he absolutely wasn't a high school recruit. No way. And what we're looking for, by the way, back to the high school recruit, is there's a, you realize that your window of who will come here and who we can get, it's very narrow because of that appeal of the Ivies. If they do too well, well, it's not always true. We've had guys pick us over the Ivies, which is great. It's just not that common. Our number one recruit this year, he essentially got tricked, at least he felt it, by Princeton and wanted him to go early. Mm-hmm. You know, admissions, he didn't get in, but he's still over 30 on the ACT, better than the average year, and like 3.8 or 9. I mean, he could have gone to another Ivy, but he put all in at Princeton, didn't get in, and came here. But we're looking for what do they call it? Private equity guys. You know, they buy a business and turn it, find the value. That's it. We want a guy. They can't be an A recruit because they won't. They'll be a, hit so hard from somewhere else, they'll go somewhere else. We need a guy who's at best a B+, at best. And we need a guy. Part of it is a sheer crapshoot, but you want a guy who you think has a tremendous amount of upside. And, you know, so many of these high school programs are so amateurish that you have, we don't, you know, we, the rowing machine and the scores mean something to us. It doesn't mean anything to you, but you want them to get good if you can the last few months of their senior year. But you see indications of it. And Simon has just been a great judge of that, and it's much better than he used to be. But still, I'd say it's 2 out of 15, so it's probably 15% of the recruits we get are ever good enough to be contributing varsity rowers at most. But this is a very unique class that we have. Now all of a sudden I got three, boom, in the freshman class. All three could be national teamers, mm-hmm. and they're recruits. That's a rarity.
So right now in the
freshman. Right now. Both of them, the shortest is 6'5", which is, poof, that's rare. But all of them were B. Well, one was B+. He was in the junior A in the world championships. But the other ones were B, or even C+. But Simon saw the value. But the entire concept of recruiting, drafting, it's one of the great farces in modern sports. Now, the NFL spends all their time, right? I mean, who knows? Millions, right? This combine is on TV. They had a pro day here. Just go back and look, especially if you follow football. Like, let's say the last 5 years, first round draft choices, at least half of them aren't even in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And it isn't even an injury. It's because they're no good. So these people have convinced everybody that you have to spend millions of dollars. Part of it is just sheer numbers. Our own athletic department in all Division I. I mean, they have 85 full rides. How many guys do they even have that are... I mean, there's at least 40 of them are, you might as well just throw money out the window because they're no good. These people aren't incompetent. It's just you don't know. That's why you need a law, a big number. That's what I'm getting at. Not that these anybody's trying to trick anybody, but this concept that they're experts, they're not experts. Not any more than a stock picker is, like in a mutual fund. You see that all the time. Hot mutual fund manager. And then, 5 years later, things down 50%. Mm-hmm. No one's that good, because if they were, they would never lose. And I found that with recruiting as well. But Simon was clever. The first major, that idea that we're hitting it so hard on the two stools, we're not doing a very good job with the recruits. He's right. Because it was a cycle of belief. Well, our recruits kind of stink. They suck. So why bother? We're just going to keep getting them at this level. So he realized, no, wait a minute, there's another level that we're not getting. It was great. Worked well. But, look at the Packers, This guy is supposed to be so good, Ted Thompson. Yeah, they won one championship. I complain about it a lot, I like to complain about the Packers, even though I like them. My theory on the Packers is this, that you've had a Hall of Fame quarterback now for over 20 years. We've won two championships. You better win now, because those Hall of Famers don't come very often. Mm-hmm. Ted Thompson has at least two draft choices, first rounders, that have played a total of 5 games, like ever, in the NFL. He's not any better than anybody else. You got to get lucky. Mm-hmm. And that's the same way with us. And that's what Simon had alluded to, that we kill ourselves to get these guys, and the great ones just come along, and they exist about 1 out of every 10,000 college freshmen. That's what it is. That doesn't mean we don't try.
Right.
And you have to make it happen. We can talk about it another time. I've made some mistakes, like how I manage some of the people, and some of you should have been better than others. And I had some about over 10 years ago that I made some mistakes. Now, most of the time, they become as good as they should be. Someone asked me last year, we got 8th in the national championship. Well, you were 3rd at the Eastern Sprints, which is our conference, which is tough. I said, yeah, but you usually end up being who you are. And we were 8th. I wanted to be top 10, and we were 8th. It wasn't better than I thought it would be, but it wasn't worse. That's generally the way it works. You probably see the same in every field you're in. Think of academics, right?
Mm-hmm.
They get to be as good as they are.
Well, we're in an hour, so probably wrap up for the day. Sure. Thank you very much for your time.